time for Type 40 with a Doctor Who podcast on the Fandom Podcast Network. On this show, we take an in-depth and closer look at this beloved television series, the spin-offs, the merchandise, even the fandom itself. Doctor Who's gone from homegrown family favourite to international entertainment legend and shaped the landscape of science fiction and fantasy for well over five decades. Now step into this TARDIS and share our journey together here on Type 40. Hello, hello, hello. We are buzzing your cloister bell yet again. We're sort of watching huddled from a nearby alleyway, ready to jump out dressed as weeping angels or Zygons, or the odd mandrel maybe. I love a mandrel, me. Ready to startle you in the small hours. Who's this? What's he going on about? I'm your regular Type 40 pilot, Dan Hadley, Birmingham's King of the Geeks, yet humble, lifelong Doctor Who fan. The good news is, if you're newer to the Whoniverse, Type 40 is still the podcast for you. There's no gatekeeping here. Only conversation, fun and games, and this time, audio visuals. It's our season 2 finale here, wrapping up what's been a really lengthy recording stretch for us, a solid year plus worth of reviews, guests and roundtables across all of space and time. And I couldn't possibly have a last day of term without inviting in my co-host on this edition of the show, because she dances across all the timelines a little bit. she's laughing. It gets earlier every time, the laugh. Just like River Song, but that's definitely not a diary tucked between the blue panel dust jacket under the fair arm of starry-eyed girl Sarah Graham. What are you reading at the moment, Sarah? You can tell us. We won't shed it all about.
Hi, Dan. Lovely to see you. I've got my diary. I've got my River Song diary here, but obviously I can't tell you.
You've proven me an errant liar already. Yep. It's a secret. Not 50 Shades again, is it?
It's not 50 Shades. Of... 50 Shades of Panatone Blue.
It seems like ages since we brought the show back last time after a break and kicked off season 2. But what with the pandemic and everything else, we just sort of rolled on. We've kept on going, haven't we? We've kept on trucking. But out of all the shows that we've recorded in the last year, have you got any favourites? What stands out for you so far?
Oh, okay. I think it's going to be an odd one. Reviewing series 12, or because to have the company... And, you know, you and Simon and Sri and everyone else just keeping me sane.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. Yes, and we've got another guest in this time, somebody new to the show, but he's far from new to podcasting, and he's definitely not new to the worlds of Doctor Who. We may have to raise our voices, actually, Sarah, because from what I know about this fella, he's always in the middle of listening to some audio drama or another, never out of his headphones. Kenny?
Hello, good morning, Kenny, good afternoon,
can you hear
good
me?
Evening.
Oh, you can hear us. Turn the audios off, turn the big finish off for a moment. Yes, we finally got this sorted out. It's writer, podcaster and editor of Big Finish Productions magazine Vortex, Kenny Smith. Welcome aboard, mate.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome, thank you for having me. Delighted to be involved. It's actually a nice, sunny, dry day in Scotland, which is not something I've been able to see very often this summer. And it's very nice to see the pair of you looking so sunny and bright and breezy. There you go. And Scottish people do roll their R's like Sylvester.
At last we know. You edit Vortex, don't you?
I do indeed.
If people haven't caught that, what's the mission statement of Vortex? Who's it for and what does it talk about?
Well, Vortex is the free, that's absolutely free, magazine from Big Finish Productions every month, previewing the releases that are coming up. You can find out about the following. For example, at the moment I'm working on the October issue, which will preview the November releases. So we get exciting previews of Doctor Who releases, obviously, and various other Big Finish ranges, the originals, your Draculas, Time Slip. If Big Finish make it, then it's in Vortex. and I get to talk to writers, actors, producers, directors, cover designers, sound designers, musicians. Basically, if they're involved in making a Big Finish production, then chances are I'll have spoken to them at one time or another.
Your finger's well on the pulse, well on the double pulse.
Very good.
Just comes out. We're going to make sure that there's links to all of that, because I think that Vortex is one of the best kept secrets of Doctor Who fandom. People out there still don't know they can get it, and they don't know they can get it for free. We can't have that. As many people need to read your words as possible, so we're going to make sure that that's in the show notes. We're going to have some fun geeking out today, though, aren't we? So there'll be more from these two in a moment, but I've got to run through a few fixed points, those familiar fandom podcast network facts. Each and every edition of our show, past, present, and future, is up on that Fandom Podcast Network master feed, of course it is, and at fpnet.podbean.com on the Podbean app. You can search for us and play us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, or stream us even on iHeartRadio, whichever or however you got here. Let us know what you think of it all through our social media presence, Instagram and Twitter, type 40 Doctor Who, or go get yourself some daily Doctor Who goodness with our fearless companions in Type 40's lively Facebook group, that panopticon of personalities filled with posts and pics from fans of all generations. Come and find us all and come and have a chat. There's links to all of that in the show notes too. As a fan base, everybody, Doctor Who's stocked with seemingly a massive percentage of creative people, I find. Creativity that shows itself in anyone, but often more than one, of a number of ways. Involvement with it and exploration of a single person's sort of connection with the show connects with others, doesn't it? And we form the sort of cooperatives and bring all these wonderful projects to life. Our own individual journey, I think, and it can intertwine or whatever, sometimes over decades. And it can even sort of cross over into day-to-day life. Projects and friendships are built. And we've just been speaking to the guys who've put together the Blackpool Remembered book, for example. You know, and that's been sort of brewing for decades. And those two guys have got really close since they've worked on it. And plenty of couples as well. They meet through Doctor Who fandom now. But it can even change the course of one's professional life. Quite extraordinary in itself when you stop and think about it. But Kenny, you're sort of an example of that to some extent, aren't you? Because you've worked in publishing for some years, I understand. Well, I don't know how many fingers you've got, actually, or how many pies, but you must have them sort of pushed into various pies all over the place. So people were most likely aware of your work with Big Finish and on Vortex, but how did you get there?
Well, right, it isn't highlights time as they were doing football. I've been a fan of Doctor Who since I first saw The Invasion of Time, so we're talking 1978 when I'd be four-ish, and blah, 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 fast forward a lot of time. I always loved writing and went to university in Edinburgh and did the journalism course, got my first job, which was up in Aberdeenshire, and I handed in my notice when I got another job back down just outside Glasgow where I live. But in my very, very last week on the Wednesday before I finished, we got a press release into the office to say that there's an awful lot of stone circles in Aberdeenshire, and there was a stone circle trail being opened, and the person to open it was Peter Davison. Uh-huh. Of all the people, that was my leaving present.
Random.
So that was my first professional bit of Doctor Who sort of related writing. But before then, I'd been doing fanzines in the Glasgow Doctor Who group fanzine, Paisley Pattern. So I'd had a bit of that over the years, but then sort of carried on writing for myself, doing fanzines. When Big Finish started, I really, really, really liked them. That's a lot of reallys. That's how much I liked. And I started doing my own fanzine after the first release of McGann season, starting with Storm Warning. So I did fanzine, which was called the McGann Zine, and spoke to various writers and so on, and just emailed people who I knew who'd been involved in them, and those who I didn't know put me in touch with the ones who I hadn't got. So it sort of started from there, doing fanzine writing. But did the first couple of issues of that because it had been doing really well and I loved doing it. But then real life sort of started to get in the way, getting a girlfriend and moving into my own flat, moving out of mum and dad's. Then my dad passed away. So sort of real life got in the way and things sort of stopped. But then it sort of picked up again when the first season of Lucy Miller Audios came out. And
it was around 2007.
Yep. So I've been a huge Sheridan Smith fan for years, absolute years, since I first saw her in an episode of Holby City and thought the girl's good and followed her career ever since. I loved that season so much, so I thought, I'm going to do another fanzine on it. And I did. And I was given copies of like the Lucy character profile, just so much stuff, and just put it all in a fanzine, and it went down really well. I had a good time doing
it. You were given, so did you approach, you'd already got a sort of semi-relationship with Big Finish?
Oh, I knew a few. I knew a few of the people and the writers just sort of socially from fandom over the years, and they knew I was supportive. They knew that what I would do would be positive, because that's my outlook in life. So doing the fanzines, did that one, and then it went down really well, and I thought, I'm going to do another one, because it was good fun. And then the next one was on the Unit spin-off series, and I got so much stuff, and I just kept going from there. And at the same time, I've been doing quite a bit of stuff for the Scottish Daily Record, you know, stuff related to Doctor Who content and TV. I was writing up
general, more mainstream journalism.
Yeah, sort of real job stuff. I mean, I'd got to know Andrew Smith really well, the writer of Full Circle. He came from the area where I was editor of the local paper of the Rutherglen Reformer, plug. I'm not editor there anymore, but still get a plug. So it's a damn good paper. And, you know, I carried on doing, you know, interviews. And then, you know, as time went by, when Peter Capaldi, all praise Lord Capaldi, became the Doctor, there was an awful lot of Scottish connections there in his first season. So you'd guest stars like Tony Asoba, Jimmy V, and, you know, did a wee piece with them every week and tied things in. So there was basically, I was doing effectively a free Doctor Who publicity campaign for the BBC in Scotland, and it was going into the Daily Record. And then that December, of course, the Christmas special was last Christmas, and the Records got an invite to the press launch. So, well, it would have been rude not to go and say hello to Lord Capaldi. So I went down and got to meet him, got a quick chat with him, and it was fantastic, really. So yeah, that's sort of been my stuff. But then Vortex wasn't something I was looking for. At the time, I was just doing, tying in with the monthly Listen Again release where people can get the book club. And I was doing a piece on that because
that's a dedicated column in Vortex, isn't it? Where an older title, a back catalogue title, gets pulled out and looked at again with fresh eyes.
So I've been doing that. But then tragically, Paul Sprague had passed away very suddenly. And I emailed Nick Briggs, say, look, if I can help out just in the short term, you know, to get the next couple of issues out till you find somebody, then more than happy to do so, because Paul had been a good friend of mine and chatted a lot. So I wrote, because of the fanzines, I've sort of skipped over this bit, I got commissioned to write the Big Finish Companion Volume 2, the official companion to the...
That was a large format hardcover book, wasn't it?
That's
it was
the one.
Sort of chronicling release by release by release.
Yep. And going through various ranges, there's like some Robin Hood and everything basically gets covered under the Big Finish Companion. I'd written that, and Paul and I, you know, been really friendly during the writing of that. He would help me out. He finished off the editing of it so we could get the book out. And then when Paul passed away, so I carried on, you know, doing the first couple of issues, and then just asked to keep doing it, which I've been doing ever since. So, you know, every time I start an issue and start my new folder for files, I always just have a wee moment, just to remember Paul, as he was... I know everybody always says that Paul was such a good guy, but genuinely in life, you don't meet many people like Paul Sprague, so bless Paul.
I never met Paul, and you know, I still associate... I mean, obviously, because there's the regular sort of short-form drama competition named in his honour, isn't there, in remembrance of him. I'm sure when Big Finish was sort of... in its earliest days of becoming as integral to Doctor Who as it is now, he was one of the names, just like Nick Briggs and just like Jason Hagelery, that I associated with Big Finish. He just seemed very sort of out there and communicative and always enthused. And to be fair, I mean, that's a common thing. I don't know about you, Sarah. Anybody who you hear talk about Big Finish, whether they're connected to it on a day-to-day basis, whether they've just written with them, and we had Chris Chapman on a couple of months ago, their boundless enthusiasm, and I sense that in your voice too, Kenny. You know what I mean, don't you, Sarah? It's very infectious.
They do, yeah. It just seems to be such this wonderful, happy workplace, and I can see, there is that kind of like warm feeling what you're all pulling together, and it's just lovely. And yeah, I'm very envious. it sounds like the like number one place to work at the moment. And it's not just Doctor Who, it's the love of stories and everything. But yeah, the Doctor Who element, you know, it is just the place where you can just geek out.
Very much so. I mean, even when you go into the office, because obviously I'm up in Glasgow and I'm not in the office that often, so I work remotely. There's obviously, of course, I wish I was down south more often and I could pop into the studios in the office. But the office does have a Dalek in it, you'll be pleased to know. Yeah. And outside, when you arrive in the building, it looks like there's three roundels on the ground floor beside the lift. So you do feel very much at home in a Doctor Who type place when you go.
That's awesome.
I was talking about creativity a little bit in the introduction there, Sarah, because, you know, obviously I'm an artist, I illustrate, you know, that's my line of work. With you, it's the written word, isn't it? You know, you've dabbled with writing yourself, like for pleasure and various other things like that. So when you see what is achieved at Big Finish, and, you know, you listen to a story like Kearney's, how he started out writing for pleasure and forming connections and things like that. It's inspiring too, isn't it?
It really is, and you just, you know, it's very rare for people to have this, you know, a job that they truly love, you know, that is the passion and it doesn't feel like a chore. And I think Big Finish is one of them places where it is like that.
And very much. I mean, recently I was asked to help with Big Finish Day, which went online this year because of the pandemic.
You'll know Gary Finney's there then, won't you?
I know the name, but I don't know personally. Try to think,
because I know that he's involved with the Hoovers,
right? And, I'll probably have met Gary, but I probably just don't associate him with the surname. But obviously, this year's event was cancelled, so to try and do something, Jason Higgellery was very keen on doing something with Nick and having something so that way the fans can be that bit closer. And of course, because when you're holding a physical event, it's limited to a capacity for the physical building of the Quad in Derby, so this way people were able from all over the world to come and join in and, you know, hear the guests chatting. I really enjoyed it. I was able to get some new content produced for people talking about my first Big Finish and a wee documentary for it on the action figures. So, you know, generally, I had an absolute ball doing it since I'm on furlough from the day job. So this gave me a wee bit of focus every day and something new and exciting to do.
That's another thing that I've been hearing a lot as well, because obviously you get people who wear several hats in life, whether they work freelance or whether they've got a very clear divide between a day job and a second job or a hobby. People sort of putting the other hat on, and it's, I wouldn't say it's got them through 2020 and the lockdown situation we had earlier in the year, but I think that it's enabled people to sort of channel it and the time and the energy in a really sort of productive way. And it's been quite transformative for some. And I think it's good for people's just well-being and mental health and little things like that. Have you got any ambitions to write scripts yourself? Because that just seems to be the one thing that you haven't done. These person gets lips. You don't have to tell us if there's anything.
Well,
you need to
I would love to. I've actually, as
got one at the bottom drawer.
As I'm looking at you here on my screen, I can actually, to my right, I've got a little file here, which is my... In fact, it's actually going to be the best Lucy Miller story ever, but it's not been commissioned, and it's just something that I've written for myself for fun, and I've never sent it to anyone, but I just know in my heart of hearts that it's the greatest script for Sheridan Smith ever, and she would love it. And in fact, she'd love it so much, she'd say, let's run off and get married. So she wouldn't even need to change her name.
Love
there you go. Well,
my future second wife, as she's referred to in this house.
She was...
It's knowing that that story and that script exists, isn't it? It's out there in the world, and sometimes that's enough. Yeah, I couldn't agree.
It's called Reality Bites, so there, I can tell you that much.
Oh, how are we spelling bites?
With an I.
Well, I thought it might be going B-Y-T. I go through phases of listening to masses of audio drama and then not really listening to very much at all. I bought the very first Big Finish release back in, well, the very first Doctor Who release back in 1999. And I've got masses of this stuff on CD. There's so, so much of it. But recently that bug really bit quite hard again, talking about biting, because it is always Big Finish that pulls me back in. I sincerely, I'm not just saying this, in my view, there are pretenders to the crown, but they are peerless, and the evolution of particularly the Doctor Who line really has been something to behold. It's very difficult to imagine. Hearing those first whispers, I think I first heard about it in Gallifrey Guardian in Doctor Who magazine when the Bernice Summerfield range was kicking off. I'd listened to a fair amount of audio drama at that point anyway. I'd always liked it since the Radio 4 Douglas Adams Hitchhiker stuff. But yeah, it crept up on me really until it was actual proper Doctor Who. I was only, you know, it was very much in the corner of my mind. But the most recent thing to brighten up my washing up time was the Susan's War box set starring Carol Ann Ford, part of this sort of Time War line they've got. So I just wanted to talk about that for a little while. It's a set of stories, as I'm sure people have worked out by now, where the Doctor's granddaughter, she gets her call-up papers, doesn't she, to become an active combatant in the Time Wars at a time when the old man himself has chosen to stay well out of it for whatever reason. And each of these four adventures in this box is quite unique and sort of riffs off Doctor Who lore and that particular character in a very sort of a very distinctive way. Susan Foreman. Susan is a much loved character from Doctor Who history, of course, stretching right the way back to the very, very beginning, and still played by the hypnotic Carol Ann Ford, I suppose. But Kenny, it must be nice to talk up a product when the standard is this good, to speak about it, to write about it.
Oh, fantastic. Because the whole series started, it was a follow-up from one of the short trip releases, which Ian Atkins had commissioned, written by Eddie Robson. And it was pretty much written as a one-off, but there just seems so much potential with Susan going to war. A good woman goes to war. And it all grew from there. Ian left Big Finish and left the project, but David Richardson carried on with it and led to it getting a full box set release of its own with four very different, very, very good scripts. I mean, I think even the opener, we've got the Censorites, which Erase Big Finish had never touched before, and giving them their first original story in, oh crikey, probably since the 1964 annual. So it's quite a fantastic combination, bringing William Russell back to join Carol Ann Ford. And it's something really quite magical, that first one, just returning to the sense sphere. And obviously there's a mention of the Ood in there as well, just to keep it all new series and all tied up together.
They pepper in all the lore so nicely. I mean, you expect releases like this, particularly kicking off a new range, they've got to get a lot of the toys out of the box, because it's a product and a line that appeals to still a minority of a minority. So you've got to go for the throat, haven't you? You can't be cynical about these things. And to really give people characters who we associate with the lead. And Susan, I have always associated her with the Censorites, even though I'm not a great fan of the actual story. That the angle of the telepathy, Susan's telepathy, and the nature of the Censorites, it's just perfect, isn't it?
I think they're just such a fascinating race, the Censorites. There's a lot, the fact they haven't really been touched on before, and Susan's latent telepathy is something obviously we had in the original story, so it's something nice to come back in Sphere of Influence. I think Eddie Robson did a great job. Obviously, he'd pretty much set the series up from the short trip, and then to have him back, and with Susan and Ian together again, is fantastic. Just such a lovely combo. And the fact that it all happens when Barbara's down the shops, it's quite a nice combo.
Give a name check, because yes, Sphere of Influence is written by Eddie Robson. We've also got The Uncertain Shore by Simon Guerrier. We've got Assets of War by Lou Morgan. And then the set finishes off with The Shoreditch Intervention by Alan Barnes. So all solid stories. I'm 3/4 of the way through the set now. I've got that last one to listen to, which I've been holding on to that little bit longer. So yes, no spoilers. I do know that there's a family reunion as part of that. But what I'm enjoying about it, Sarah, is the fact, I think you can tell, that despite the fact there's four writers, David Richardson's produced this, you said, didn't you? And I think they're all directed by Lisa Bauman. And some of them are more connected than others. Some of them pick up right after the next one or whatever else. But all these stories sort of feel like they belong. And the Susan character in particular, when I look back, I associate this version with the version of Susan that we see in The Five Doctors, where she's in the raincoat, yes, with a scarf all tied up. And you can imagine her doing spy work somehow. You know, it's all a bit, little bit Secret Army, Kenny. Do you remember Secret Army, the old
indeed
1970s show? It just seems to fit. So various stories, obviously she gets these sort of call-up papers, and she's got her doubts about working with the Time Lords and draws some very clear lines for them. But in the second story, she's sort of undercover as an artist, yeah, isn't she? She's with her handler, Vecklin, and there's some comic touches there. It's all a little bit Agatha Christie, but then it does go into that paranoia of shows like Secret Army. These stories, the three that I've listened to, they couldn't be more different. The third is a sort of a monster movie, really. It's almost like if Aliens starred a 70-year-old woman. You know, I just love them. How deep are you into it now, Sarah?
Oh, yeah, I've just got to the monster one. Yeah, but that's the beauty of Doctor Who, though. You know, one week you have this genre, the other week you have this genre. So, yeah, it does really follow on. And because Bowerman, you know, directs them all, there is that continuity, you know, keeping them all in place. But, yeah, Carol Ann Ford is just, she's delightful. And it's so, it's strange for me. And, you know, I still see her as, you know, this little girl. And I think she even said in an interview that she found it really difficult remembering she's adult Susan and not young Susan. And just seeing her with William Russell, well, not seeing her, but hearing her with William Russell.
No, you can't.
Well, yeah, you can see it in my head, yeah. And that reunion, and oh, it brought back so many emotions.
Her voice has hardly changed.
No, yeah, that's the beauty of it. I mean, sometimes, you know, when you hear the actors, you can tell that they've aged, but Carol just sounds exactly the same.
You've met Carol Ann Ford, haven't you, Sarah? But you didn't know her at the time.
No. Yeah, this is like the saddest celebrity story ever. So I was at the National Space Museum in Leicester, and there was like a doctoral weekend going off, and we'd gone on the Saturday, but I'd only just started like getting into like the classic era and the Big Finish stuff. And it was this like Science of the Time Lords event, and there were like props and exhibits and things. So I took the kids, and I'd gone to the toilet, and I was doing my hair and everything. And there were these two women chatting at the side, and you know, I'd like said hello and everything, and we were just nattering about lipstick. And then when I went out and we went a bit further, and I walked past and they were sat down signing things. And it was Katie Manning and Carol Ann Ford. Fantastic. Doing my hair, doing my lipstick, washing my hands, and I'm completely oblivious. And then I was absolutely kicking myself afterwards.
I've met a celebrity in the toilet.
Oh, what?
It was 1995. I was at the Cult TV convention in Great Yarmouth. And I went to the loo, and next thing you know, there's a very tall, shaven-headed bloke next to me, and it's Mitch Pileggi, Skinner from The X-Files, having a pee.
Oh, yeah.
He was a regular on the convention. So, yeah. Yes, I've met James May from Top Gear and the Grand Tour in the toilet once at a local Air Force base, that was. I went, it's a long story.
I love this. Podcasts about toilets.
Yeah. Last day of term.
Absolutely.
I've
met Carol Ann Ford at the one and only Big Finish recording I've been at so far. Mm-hmm. That was the Domain of the Bird back in January 2013, and William Russell as well, actually.
Yeah.
And had a lovely day there, and the lunch was fantastic.
So we keep hearing. Sarah, listening to these stories, you know, I don't know if you're picking up on this, but I think the sweet spot that they hit is chiming with the classic stuff, as Kenny was just saying about the Sensorites and everything that's intrinsic to Susan. But this seems to me, and I think one of the reasons why we can imagine that we've actually watched this, is it is so thematically and tonally. This is something I can imagine Russell T. Davies in particular putting on screen and showrunning.
Yes, particularly the first one, the Sensorite one with the Dalek battle and the battle TARDISes. I want to see what they look like.
I know, and I keep wondering because Kenny, don't you bloody say it. But because as the story goes on, and I don't know, I wanted to ask the both of you if I've picked up on this accurately, because as the story goes on, you hear more and more of the battle TARDIS, and just in the third one, it seems to have, from what you can hear, an actual lock and a wooden door. You start to hear it creak as Veclin and Susan go in and out of it. So I'm thinking, is it a police box? Has Susan actually got, not necessarily the Doctor's TARDIS, but has she got, have they given her basically a copy for whatever reason, for a security thing? I don't know. And I'm wondering, do you find that out in the fourth one, or will that be revealed? Had you picked up on that too?
In my head, it's the same one. In my head canon, yes.
Oh, this is really good stuff. So, Kenny, do you think this is a deliberate thing with Big Finish, isn't it? To have a foot in both the classic and the new season, to strike that balance?
Well, I think really, Doctor Who is a lot of people say there's old series and there's new series. I mean, technically, yes, there is that gap in production blocks, but it is still the one ongoing story. So really, I mean, I love the fact we've got Susan meets Vecklin and Cardinal Rasmus, who are ongoing characters in 7th and 8th Doctor stories, which I really enjoyed that tapestry all tying up. I mean, for me, it pretty much is the one ongoing story. It's in my head, there never were any production gaps. I followed the new adventures. I followed Big Finish through the 90s. So, and into the 2000s. So to me, Doctor Who's always been in production, even if it was just in my head where I was watching the images of the book come to life.
For me as well. Another thing, Sarah, listening to the third story, Assets of War, the Oroviks, did you think that they were what I think they are in the Russell T Davies years? Oh, she's looking at me a bit blankly.
I'm trying to remember.
I thought they were going to be revealed to be a very particular monster. I won't spoil that plot for anybody who's listening to this. We'll talk about that off mic. I thought you might give me the nod there, because I was waiting for that line at the end.
Ah, so they were the Nymon all the time.
A second only to the Mandrills in my personal Hall of Fame. What I really enjoy about this, I have sincerely always loved Carol Ann Ford, and I have no idea really why Russell, you too, but why Russell, Stephen Moffat or Christie, why nobody has approached her and brought her back to the live action show. I've got no idea, because the performance is still so energetic. It's still absolutely Susan. And this woman, her voice, she is very, very youthful, but a connection with the character. If anything, it's all deepened so much. And she's always seemed, I don't know if Carol Ann Ford herself is a natural eccentric. And in a sense, I don't think I want to know. She's sort of a mysterious figure for me. But the character really is. She's close enough to the Doctor to have that mystique about her, but be distinctive and have her own thing going on. I think she's got her own perception of her place in the Time War and her place in the universe and the telepathy angle. I'm so pleased that Big Finish have latched onto that rather than just ignore it. Because even though there's, you know, you could say the Doctor's got those kind of latent abilities too, and some writers pick those up and put them down, but it's never been a selling point, has it? But with Susan, I think it's the way that she relates and connects with other peoples of the universe, other races, and what she views. And I think that's why she views joining the Time War, for want of a better expression, why she could do something productive and something positive. The fact that this war is happening, that is a clear reality. And I get the impression that she wants to bring that war to a close as soon as she can and play her part, can it?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. She's got a different take on the war, having been away from Gallifrey for so long, that she's not quite seen what the Doctor has seen and what the Time Lords have started to do. But just when you're mentioning TV series, I mean, of course, there were all those rumours during the production of season 10 that Carol Ann would show up with Peter Capaldi, because of all the Doctors who would to meet her again, he would be just been the most perfect one, given that he had the photo of her and one of River on his desk at the university. That would have just been a perfect combination if she'd been in briefly. I just think that was something that was missed out on. And should Peter Capaldi ever come to Big Finish one day, it would just be fantastic if the pair of them could have that meeting just to... It just would be so good. Just you can just hear Capaldi being all, amazing. Susan! That's a bit more Billy Connolly than Peter Capaldi, but... yes.
That might even work better on audio, come to think of it.
It would.
And we'd all love
it. It'll absolutely happy. You know, if we've got Eccleston back, we're going to get Capaldi.
Fingers crossed.
It genuinely is the case now where I think that anything can happen with Big Finish. And I think they very rarely, and this is just me speaking now, obviously, they very rarely put a foot even slightly in the wrong direction. And if ever they do something where you think, okay, well, maybe that didn't quite work, I always feel that it was a valid thing to explore and to try with the creativity that we were talking about, to just push outwards with the format of audio itself and with the... inadvertent commas, the world of Doctor Who, and just to see what gives and what connects in the way that you were speaking about, Kenny, because with careful writing, with steady writing over time, I mean, I know that they put a great deal of thought into these things, the way that writers do, but I think sometimes they could like link up with other elements of the show's mythos, almost having a life of their own, almost getting there under their own steam, where the audience, as Doctor Who fans are want to be. We join the dots sometimes before the writers do, I think. It's the headcanon thing, isn't it? It's, you know, it sounds like I've been doing it with the Orifix already, you know, just off this box here. Just to wrap up, have you got a favourite story of the three you've listened to so far, Sarah?
Of the three, the first one, the sphere of influence, because I enjoy hearing Russell and Carl and Ford, and I don't know, just the excitement of a Gallifrey story, but not set in Gallifrey, because I always think what happened in the series is it slowed everything down, and it was always just council meetings. Every time they'd just be in a room or a chamber. I'm fed up of seeing that kind of side. I want to see some action and to have these battle TARDISes and all this stuff going off, and you know, the different characters of Gallifrey. And, you know, seeing Carol and Ian, Carol facing against the Daleks, and, you know, the Dalek control. I'm just, look, I'm getting so excited. Daleks trying to control the TARDISes and getting cleverer.
Yeah.
And it just really brings it home that how menacing the Daleks are, because I think they've kind of, I don't know, I think the number of stories we've had on screen, it's kind of been diluted a little bit. Whereas I think in Big Finish, doing this Time War stories, they've gone back to being the big threat. And things like the Sensorites, you know.
Cunning, aren't they? Yeah,
very cunning. And the fact that they could, you know, outwit the Daleks. I mean, I was never really that. They're not my favourite alien species, but after hearing this one, and yeah, you know, they use the telepathy against them. And it's shown in such a really fun way, these Daleks arguing with each other and the paranoia. And yeah, I just thought it was just really fun. And it brought everything together, like you were saying, these strands, you know, you got the 60s story, you know, there's references to the old. And yeah, it just makes me really excited.
I think my favourite is probably Sphere of Influence as well, for a lot of the reasons that you said. How about you, Ken? Have you got a favourite?
Oh, yes. Splendid stories, all of them.
Very, very diplomatic. So, yeah, Susan's War is available from Big Finish at the moment. We'll pop some links to where you can go straight to that and hear the trailer at the very least at the Big Finish website afterwards. It's time for a short break now, because across the Fandom Podcast Network, there are masses of other conversations being had, available to stream and download too, just as easily as this one. A carefully prepared menu of other shows celebrating other geeky interests. And we'd be letting you down if we didn't point you their way. Listen to this.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We like to continue to feed your ears by inviting you to listen to the Fandom Podcast Network and all of the other awesome shows we have to offer. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, our weekly pop culture news podcast. Blood of Kings, our Highlander podcast. Couch Potato Theater, our podcast celebrating our favorite movies. Time Warp, the Fandom Flashback Podcast, discussing a year in movies and our favorite pop culture topics. End Zone, the NFL Podcast. Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock Podcast. Union Federation, our Star Trek and Orville Podcast. Hair Metal, the 80s and early 90s rock metal podcast. Type 40, our Doctor Who Podcast. Lethal Mullet, a 1980s and 90s action film podcast. What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars Podcast. And our newest show, Making Treks, a new Star Trek podcast with a deep dive into the final frontier with hosts Mark Newbold and Adam P. O'Brien. You can enjoy all of these great Fandom Podcast Network shows on our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. Fandom Podcast Network is also on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. You can also find us on Facebook under Fandom Podcast Network. You can also email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can also find us on Instagram and Twitter under Fandom Podcast Network. Thank you for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
See, there really is something for everybody there. And when you find your next second favourite podcast and want to tell the world, or maybe even tell the universe, well, help is at hand. There's merch to match. Head over to the tpublic.com store and search for the Fandom Podcast Network's storefront. You'll find all the logos to all the shows on t-shirts, hats, mugs, and any bit of geek chic you can think of, really. Treat yourself, treat your other selves. and support the Fandom Podcast Network into the bargain so everybody really can win. Yeah, let's get this one in now, Kenny, because you're a podcaster.
Yes.
How long have you been behind the mic? What's the show and what kind of conversations do you have there? It's called The Power of Three.
It is. We've been doing Power of Three for about a year now. Myself, Tom Harris, who was a notable political podcaster. He used to be a member of Parliament for Glasgow South and is a big Doctor Who fan. And he likes to go on about the fact that he used to meet David Tennant at Labour Party events a lot. And David Steele, who's a friend of mine, not that David Steele, where we're talking politics, a very different David Steele. And the three of us, we pick three things to discuss in each episode. So it's three of us talking about three things, hence the name The Power of Three. And it can be Big Finish, it can be Doctor Who Magazine, it can be story titles, even recently we've been sort of pushing the format slightly and discussed our favourite versions of the theme tune and our favourite TARDIS console rooms. We are very into our Doctor Who and stuff. So yes, it's Power of Three Pod, if you want to find it
You've
on Twitter.
You've not got to a pod. You don't have to look so self-conscious. You're amongst other Doctor Who fans now.
Well,
both us and you.
I'm a guest, and I don't like to be rude.
But these are the conversations, and these are the kind of the little things that we've all thought about, aren't they, and Sarah, and the lists that we've made as well when we put, okay, number one would be this, number two would be that. This is perfectly normal behaviour, Kenny. I'm broadcasting it to the world. Probably less so, but we all do these things. I'm not one to judge, am I? Not after 60-odd episodes of this stuff. Yeah, The Power of Three. You'll find links to that in the show notes too, and anything else that we...
I just thought Kenny really liked The Power of Three episode, and that's why he called it that.
All right. Well, it is an episode of Doctor Who, yeah. So, yeah.
Okay.
Viewers, you did not see. It wasn't the best episode.
Okay. Back to the coalface. And, what I was wondering, Kenny, since we've got you now.
Yes.
I was wondering, you know what's coming next. We've established that you've got your finger on the double pulse and on the release schedule. So, we're about to go on a little bit of a break in September. What would you advise listeners who maybe they've sort of not listened to a great deal of Big Finish, maybe they've lapsed a little the way that I sometimes do, or maybe they sort of feast on every release and they pre-order everything, but what is your instinct about what's an unmissable release in September?
Right, well, I'd say that if you haven't caught up with it yet, I would have to hugely recommend, this came out last year to mark 20 years of Big Finish, The Legacy of Time, which was a six-story set encompassing various Big Finish ranges, which basically is a celebration of Doctor Who from start to finish. So if you haven't got that, I would definitely recommend that one. Of course, this month, August, is the release of Out of Time 1, which will see the 10th and 4th Doctors meeting up for an exciting adventure in time and space. You can read all about it in The Vortex, which is out at the moment. As I'm just checking my list as to what's coming up.
Put you on the spot a little bit there, don't I?
We also have September has the 8th Doctor, The Time War Series 4, where we have the return of Davros to face Paul McGann for the first time since Terra Firma back in about 2004.
That sounds exciting.
Maybe 2000.
And remind us who's playing Davros.
It's Terry Molloy is back playing old Prudenface.
The best Davros. I don't care what anybody says, and I love you. Yes, respect Michael. Respect Michael Wisher, but I love Terry Molloy.
He was my first. Well, obviously David Gooderson was my first Davros, but Terry is the one who I absolutely love to bits. He's when I think of Davros, I think of Terry Molloy. It's just wonderful. We've also got coming up in October and November The Time War, The Shadow of the Daleks and The Monthly Range, which are 8 one-off episodes which are all linked together.
I'm glad you've mentioned this because I couldn't quite work out what the format was to that. Because it's the 5th Doctor in The Time War, isn't it?
Yep, and it's in 4 stories each month, 4 episodes, which are self-contained, but they all link up in the final story, which is out in November, but written by John Dorney, so you know it's going to be quite a clever one then, and it will all make sense.
Oh, John's writing them all?
John's written the last one. It's various writers. We've got Dan Starkey, okay. Lizzie Hopley, Simon Guerrier, just a whole host of writers names, doing different episodes. So it should be quite a different flavours, different takes, but it will all make sense in the end, I promise. And, of course, we shouldn't forget that we've got the War Master set 5 coming as well, which is one of my favourite ranges. We've got Derek Jacobi being set loose on all of time and space, and Paul McGann's in it as well. So that's going to be quite exciting. And then the biggie is in November, which will have the 10th Doctor and River Song meeting again, which is one that, I've always said this, it needs to happen, given that when the Doctor meets River in the Time of Angels, that it's evident that he's seen her a few more times since we last saw them in Silence in the Library and the Forest of the Dead. This is something that I've hoped would happen for years. And finally, we are getting 3 adventures with the Doctor and River. So that's plenty
really
for me to look forward to.
These are the combinations of people that you want to hear, aren't they, Sarah?
Yeah, I've always wanted to see more of the 10th Doctor and River because it was so tragic. Oh, damn Moffat.
And leave us hanging like that. Yes, the out of time thing, obviously, that's huge. 4 plus 10. And I'd wanted to ask you about that, actually, because I gathered that was part of some sort of trilogy, because it's not actually labelled Out of Time 1 on the cover, is it? But I get there are other Out of Time releases coming. And are they mix and matches of Doctors or other things? Is there any... You just have to nod your head.
There definitely are more. Nick Briggs confirmed this in Vortex, that there are other Doctor pair-ups planned.
I wondered if it was simple as that, or whether it was something thematic, as you've just described those 8 Dalek stories in the one release, if they were going to be bringing together other companions or just other aspects of the mythos somehow.
Yeah, to the best of my knowledge, and because I'm not privy to the scripting process until it gets closer to time for Vortex releases, but I know that more stories are planned with Doctors meeting up, and that's pretty much all that I know.
Obviously, this is something I think this particular... pairing, no offence against any of the others, there's something about David Tennant's Doctor and Tom Baker's Doctor. They're alike enough to seem like they belong together, but different enough to know that there's going to be differences in approach and quirks to the performance to make it really come alive. And I won't say the backstory is going to be inconsequential, but I could probably listen to those two guys read the phone book, as the cliche goes, Sarah.
I could too. And yeah, it's the perfect pairing. Just to me, you know, you've got Tom Baker's like the golden era of the classic era, arguably Tennant's the golden era of the new era. So yeah, it just absolutely makes sense to put them together. So yeah, I'm really giddy about that one as well.
Saying the trailer has just been released this week, which is fantastic, and we get to hear a bit of interaction between the pair of them right at the end, so it's definitely worth checking out. I cannot wait to hear it, because I know that the guys are really excited about this one. So it's two of my favourite Doctors, so the Doctor I grew
up with,
imagine. Especially, so bring it on.
I can only imagine how excited David Tennant was.
Oh, absolutely.
The actor Mark Bonner from the Space 1999 range, and various TV shows and comedies and dramas and all that sort of thing. I follow him on Twitter, and he shared a fantastic picture of himself meeting Tom Baker for a recording of a Big Finish drama. This was just a couple of days ago. And I'm sure Mark won't mind me saying, this is a man who's a middle-aged man, and but stood next to his boyhood hero, the smile on his face. He looks like he's about 9 years old. And I think there's something about the presence of the Doctors, all of them, that kind of takes us back there to the point where it's impossible to hide. And obviously, you know, this Mark is an actor of several decades himself, and there he is. You know, he can't keep the fanboy in. It's absolutely, absolutely wonderful.
Yeah,
and
Mark,
I imagine that
Mark's, I've got to know Mark quite well through Big Finish. In fact, he actually grew up in the town where I live, East Kilbride. So we've had that wee connection. And when he shot Guilt, that was shown in BBC earlier this year. That was made in East Kilbride as well. So it was a chance for him to come home. But Mark is, he's just one of the most in-demand actors. and he never does selfies with anyone. But he told me that I think he's only ever asked for three selfies in his life. One was with Tom, obviously, and another was with the late Carrie Fisher. So he's in quite good company there.
Wow.
I can't really argue with that. I've never particularly got the autograph thing. I have got autographs, particularly like when I was younger, but I've never been one for, you know, and it's the same with selfies. I think people ask me about the people I've met connected with Doctor Who, which is nowhere near as many as a lot, but they say, oh, didn't you get a selfie? And I either have to say, well, look, it was either before everybody had a camera in their pocket, or I just didn't think to. That's knocking anybody who takes them, but yeah, I totally get why people would not.
I have two selfies, Doctor Who related, and that's with Graham Harper and Russell T Davies, and yeah, but I had to. Yeah. But it was more the being able to just talk to them and just say, you know, thank you. And give them some feedback. I mean, like, RTD is like God to me.
But so, you didn't take that yourself, though, did you? Somebody else took it for you. So it's you've got a photograph with Russell T. Davies. It's not a selfie, because a selfie is when you can see your hand up like that. And everybody's that little bit too close than they feel comfortable being. Whereas the picture of you with Russell, I don't think it's like that at all. I think it's lovely. Yeah.
I got a selfie with Russell T. I like to get autographs from the doctors and have a signed picture, and I tend to get them from my daughter as well. But I'm not really I'm not a big autograph hunter at all. But I was down at the Doctor Who Experience in 2016, 2017. I just was going, just walking there from the Torchwood Tower, making my way up to Cardiff Bay, up to the point of the Doctor Who Experience. And just over at the corner of my eye, just looked over to my left and saw there was a very tall shape moving towards me, and thought, 6'5", quite a big build. Is that a rugby player? No, I don't reckon. And then realised it was Russell T, because they were doing Midsummer Night's Dream at the time, BBC Wales. And I slowed down, because I'd interviewed Russell a few times for Vortex, and because I'd met him years previously at a BBC press launch in Scotland, and had swapped emails and sort of been in touch intermittently. And he came over, and you could see the, it's a Doctor Who fan. They've clocked me. and he thought, okay. And he came over and said, hello. Back. And I'm going to introduce myself to him and said, oh, I'm Kenny. And we speak quite often for Vortex. I said, oh, hello. And it was just fantastic. Your big hugs from him. My wife was there. She got hugs. He was just absolutely fantastic. And said, would you like a selfie? Because I would never have asked. And he came down, and just because he's 6'5", I'm only 5'11 and a half. And he came down and nice big picture. And he was just marvellous, to use his words.
He's so happy. He just seems to be constantly happy. It's just brilliant. And yeah, I'd not realised how tall he was. Well, I'm 5'3", so he was like a giant to me. So at the time, he was sat down. And even so, yeah, there's still this big gap. But he's just like this massive teddy bear. I did get to hug him. They're like, can I hug you, please? And he went, oh, yeah. He's lovely.
It's up to socially distance now, though. Distant huggings are allowed.
I think that takes us to our final thought quite nicely, because I couldn't have the ultimate Christopher Eccleston-era fan here in Sarah and the guy who edits Vortex magazine. I couldn't have you both on the same podcast at the same time without mentioning the fact that Christopher Eccleston has very recently been announced as returning to the bosom of Doctor Who fandom and the role of the Doctor after 16 years probably since he actually played it. He's back. We're going to hear him again. We're going to see him in our heads, I have no doubt about it, with the power of that man's performance. So I'm not going to put Kenny on the spot, don't worry. But yeah, I was wondering, this could go, if not anywhere, there's all sorts of places that creatively Big Finish could take this. I wondered though, because people are speculating already about one thing, well, about two things, but one of them is fairly obvious, about who the supporting cast may be. You know, that's by the by. What I wanted to ask you is, Sarah, what are your instincts? Where are Big Finish going to set this? Are they going to set it as a prequel to Series 1? or are they going to drop stories in mid-season? What do you think?
I think there's potential for both. I personally would like to see him with Rose and Jack again, and I think you've got the scope, you know, after the Doctor dances up until Bad Wolf. We know there's adventures that have been previously mentioned and referenced. I mean, you've got the scope with Rose anytime after Aliens of London and World War III. I would probably suspect that there will be a prequel. I mean, yeah, it could go anywhere. I mean, somebody mentioned on YouTube in the comments about, you know, the at the end of Rose when he goes back, when he goes in the TARDIS after Rose says that she's got to stay with Mickey because she's got to look after him, and he comes back. I personally don't think it did go anywhere. But yeah, it's a time machine, so you could have done. But yeah, there's plenty. I think it doesn't seem as, when you think about it, isn't as rigid as what people think. I think there's plenty of scope for these adventures. It just depends whether you want Rose and Jack and Mickey or whether you want to see Eccleston with somebody else.
I think he's such a distinctive actor. And, you know, Big Finish are brilliant now, creating their own brand new companions and supporting characters. You know, I'd be happy if they did that too. I think there's potential there, you know. And I'd like to see, I mean, we mentioned this in a video we made recently, didn't we, Sarah? You know, I'd like to see him maybe with Tosh from Torchwood. I thought they had a nice little thing going on in Aliens of London. And the various other sort of little relationships we see snippets of and hear snippets of mentioned throughout Series 1. I think there's so much there. Kenny, same question to you. You don't have to answer that if you can't. If you can't answer it, then you just talk about how enthusiastic are you about hearing Christopher Eccleston again and how it made you feel getting that,
well,
seeing that press release.
I can tell you what I know about the series, and that's naff all. I know nothing about it, which is really exciting for me. So I'll get to find out as everybody else does. I really don't mind what happens. To me, the bottom line is Christopher Bloomin' Eccleston. It's not one that I saw coming. I didn't think it would happen because I know that Jason Hegelery had met Chris at the Gallifrey convention, but obviously things went well, and now we're looking forward to 12 new episodes. And you think about 12 episodes with Chris Eccleston, that's almost doubling his era straight away. The fact that he's been so enthused by, you know, he's discovered the love that fandom have for him, and it's, he may have thought it was something that would come and go, as obviously has happened with other roles in his career, but people love him. They absolutely love him. He's so important. And in many ways, he's one of the most overlooked people in Doctor Who history in so many ways, because people think, and not in any way playing down what David Tennant did, but what Christopher Eccleston and Billy Piper did was bring Doctor Who back to the public consciousness and to make them realise Doctor Who is good. There's so much there, so much enthusiasm, so much character, and there's just, he's fantastic is the only word that springs to mind. He really is. He's what he brings is an awful lot of presence and character and commitment. I mean, that's something that... Yes. You watch him in something like The A-Word, which has been one of my favourite TV shows in the last few years. And just the fact that people who just cannot communicate all around this child who's got autism. But it turns out he's not the only one who struggles to communicate. And Eccleston is absolutely brilliant. He's something he said at the time was that he struggled a bit with the more comedic and lighter elements of playing the Doctor. And that's something he obviously has a lot more experience of now, particularly through The A-Word. And I really, really can't wait to hear what he's going to do and bring to it. And just whatever happens, I know we're all going to love it, because Big Finish have got this habit of bringing out the best. I mean, I know a lot of the people were never big fans of the Sixth Doctor era, but he's, I mean, the fact that, you know, Colin Baker won season poll in Doctor Who magazine years ago is your favourite Doctor. It just shows you what can be done with the power of audio. And the best pictures are all in our mind anyway.
I don't think we can really top that. I think that sums it up absolutely perfectly. And that warps up, season 2 of Type 40 of Doctor Who podcast. We're taking a few weeks off now, but fear not, we're not going to leave you hanging for that long. We've got something very special to sort of tide you over, and I'll be back with season 3 before you know it, we may sound a little different. You're not going to want to miss any of that. Listen out for it wherever you found this. It could have been on Apple Podcasts. Simply search for the Fandom Podcast Network on Apple Podcasts. Kenny's waving a Drashig at me. No, Kenny's gone. He's down. The Drashig's got him. We'd love a 5-star review, seeing as you're there, just so new listeners can find us that bit easier. We're also over on iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Google Play, the Podbean app, and Spotify. So easy to use. We're so easy to find, Sarah. Search for the Fandom Podcast Network over there. All the listings just drop down. You can't miss it. Anything you want to say to us, you can do it direct if you wish. Email type40doctorwho@gmail.com, Twitter or Instagram at type40doctorwho. And there's that Facebook page and that Facebook group for any real-time extra-dimensional chit-chat you want to have. I can be found scattered across all of space and time, but mostly on Twitter and Instagram as the Spacebook, where I talk about whatever catches my eye, my imagination, or both in popular culture, inside or outside of the TARDIS. Kenny, where can people connect to you on social media? How can they get a hold of you virtually or physically, get a copy of Vortex before their very eyes?
Well, you can find Vortex at www.bigfinish.com/Vortex. If you want to find me on the wonderful world of the interweb, best place to get me is on Twitter, where my handle is at FinishedZine. That's FinishedZ. Z-I-N-E, or if you're in America, Z-I-N-E. And that's the best place to get me because I'm rubbish. I never use my Facebook because it's connected to my work one, and I gave up on my Instagram years ago.
There you go. A couple of disclaimers there, but we got there in the end. And the podcast again, where can people find that?
You can find that at Power of Three Pod somewhere on. You can find it on Twitter, and then it's all got links to the website where there's articles as well.
Sarah, you'll be back naturally. In the meantime, where can people catch up with you or hear more of you or even see more of you?
You can find me on Parler at Starry Eyed Girl, and obviously if you contact your lovely self and, you know, the Type 40 website and everything, you know, you can, if you want to send an email to Type 40, obviously get passed on to me, and you can usually see me floating around YouTube as well.
Back to that river song analogy. You skip and dance around, don't you? Thanks again, both. We hope you can come back again, Kenny, at a later date.
Yeah, pleasure.
Talk some more audio.
He hasn't got a choice, he's not.
Because I've been meaning to talk about the Big Finish stuff on this show for, I'm not joking, for a good 18 months. We've been waiting for the right opportunity and the right release. I think we found it this time. It's been a great show to draw this season to a close. So, yeah, thanks again, both. And thanks to you for listening. Join us again next time here on the Fandom Podcast Network for another episode of Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast where we always have the time if you have the space.